welcome to the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast with me, Nicole Sachs. You are here. Hello, everybody. How are you today? This is Nicole, and you have reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. Welcome to it. Thrilled to be here with you today. Approaching the heart of the holiday season. I hope everybody is hanging in there. It's a hectic time of year. It sometimes can be a stressful time, you know, financially, lots of gifts to buy, family stuff. So I hope that it is treating you kindly. Today we have a real treat for the podcast. As many of you know, I have a membership community that I meet with in person twice a month, once on Zoom for a Q&A, which is a chill, casual hangout with me where people ask any questions they want and I answer them. And one is a more formal 3-hour membership Zoom where we have a lesson and we practice journal speak together and we break into groups and then we come back and everybody discusses everything and I answer everyone's questions. So it's really been just, we're rounding out a year for that. And it's really been like the most gratifying and really helpful thing I've done in a very long time. So I'm thrilled to be part of it. And today, my community has done something incredibly generous. They've agreed for their hour-long Q&A to be recorded for you to share on this podcast. I kind of put a question out to the group and said, hey, how would people feel about this? And like 99% of the people were like, yeah, my question could be out there to help others. And so we recorded it. And that's what I'm going to play for you today. And it's just so packed with amazing information. People's questions are always things that I couldn't necessarily anticipate, not their specific questions. And it usually rolls into a theme. Today, the theme was really around radical acceptance and patience and kindness for ourselves. But it really covers a lot of different excellent questions. And so people were just generous to allow me to do that and to offer that information to our world community. So I'm going to play that for you. And as with any recorded Q&A Zoom, it's a little messy sometimes waiting for people to unmute. But for the most part, actually, it wasn't. And we were able to really just capture the whole thing. So I want you to enjoy that. And if for whatever reason you're there at home looking to gift yourself something for the holidays or just really looking for more support and you want to join our membership community, it is as easy as going to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com, get to the homepage and just scroll down a little bit and you will see the button to join our membership community and to get the benefits of not only our 2 live meetings a month, but a private community on Facebook where I'm answering your questions every single day. So enjoy that. And also just a quick reminder that if you are interested in being as if you're in the room with us for our live from Omega Talks, Lisa and I recently offered that on the website. It's available if you want to purchase. It's over 7 hours of talks. It will feel like you are at Omega with us. And that button is on the homepage. There's a little orange bar where you can go to the live from Omega Talks, or there's also a tab on the website for you to purchase those and everything else. Any other support you need is available there. All right, guys, much love as you move through this holiday season. Enjoy this incredible Q&A session with my private membership community where they're going to ask all their questions and I'm going to do my very best to answer. Sending you big love. All right, here we are in the member Q&A, and I just got permission from some of my members that they are willing to generously share their questions and my answers on air for the podcast because we do this member Q&A every single month, and I feel so excited after each call that like we really got some important stuff done because I'm nothing without your input, ideas, and questions. I have a lot of ideas, but a lot of them I repeat because this work bears repeating. And when you guys come with fresh and interesting and new questions, it's really helpful to me to know what kind of content to share. So thank you guys for your generosity. And let's get started. So Katie, I saw your hand up first. Kick us off.
Hi. Okay, so right now I am really struggling with grief around what I didn't get in childhood. So it is the holidays, and there's a lot of reminders of family and childhood and all that stuff right now. So I was at my partner's family for Thanksgiving, which was lovely, but another reminder of what I didn't get. And so right now I'm really struggling with feelings of like, I just want to be saved. Why do I have to be my own parent right now? Why is life suffering and feelings of unfairness? And also just feeling like I am so exhausted of being like trying to fill this role that wasn't there for me. So any advice around that?
It's a great question. It's a great question, and one I hear so often. And actually, when it comes up a lot, Katie, when people are parenting their own children, and it's so ironic because they resent their own children for the parenting they're providing. And it's not a joke. And I actually experience it at times with my own kids, and I have to just say, okay. It's like, who's upset here? It's not me, 51-year-old me. It's the inner child. So the two things I want to say are around acceptance and inner child work. So let's talk about acceptance first. I know. First of all, let's remind ourselves that acceptance does not equal agreement. Because you practice acceptance around something, it does not mean that you are okay with that it happened. It doesn't mean that you're okay with how it perpetuates. It doesn't mean that you don't need to forgive abusers to practice acceptance. So just a little reminder. But here's what acceptance is. We spend our entire lives fighting against what is. And what you often hear me say is transformation begins with the radical acceptance of what is, that Danielle Laporte quote. And it is the most powerful transformative force in the world to stop wanting or needing something to be other than it is. It changes everything because your whole energy, the whole inflammatory energy that starts to course through your body when you are feeling that anger and that grief that something is not the way you want it to be, is causing TMS, but it's also causing just and that unsettling, uncomfortable feeling of like, it's no fun to walk through life with it. And so, what I will say is, your family, okay, so your family is a headline, and under that headline is several people. And what I would really do, and I think would be a really powerful exercise for you, is to do the journal speak for radical acceptance around your family. And it would look something like this. And I know nothing about Katie's family, so I'm making up names, Susan. Susan is my sister. Susan treated me like this when we were children. And as we grew up, Susan did this. As she did the things that she did, I became this kind of person. I betrayed myself because I needed to be this to be fitting in with my family. My mother did this. And you just tell the story. You tell the story, and it can be journal speaky, but it's not a rant. It's not a 5-year-old. It's actually a calm and confident grown woman saying, "This is the way it went." And when you get done telling the whole story, you look at it and you say, "This is the way it went. It will never change." And I know that sounds sort of negative, but it's not. It's a tremendous relief because it won't. You know what can change? You can change. And as you change, the dynamic will change. You often hear me say, if we're going to use the given, A plus B equals C. If A changes, even if B doesn't, C must change, and C is the relationship. And so, but practicing radical acceptance, sitting with the grief, doing the inner child work, but then also saying, here it is, baby. You get this beautiful experience with your partner. How lovely. You get to maybe one day choose to have your own children and give them a different experience. But this was yours, and that's what happened. And it takes all the air out of the anxiety balloon. I have to, and by the way, it's not a one and done. I have to do this stuff all the time. I have to remind myself at 3 in the morning. I have to put double hand to heart and like hold myself tight. We all do, but that's the way.
Thanks, Nicole. That's helpful.
All right, that's good. Joanna, you're next.
Hi. My question is, I want to talk about IBS as a symptom imperative, because I've never had these types of issues before and ended up in the ER yesterday because I had a seed of doubt that it wasn't my chronic pain, which is fair. I had other symptoms that I don't normally have alongside the chronic pain. And so they found being backed up. Essentially, they found that I was completely backed up. And I've never had that issue before, ever. And apparently that, amplified by the chronic pain that is in my abdomen, created a more horrible chronic pain that couldn't be managed by all the non-pharmaceutical things that you've taught us, that I do, that I preach as a 28-day challenge, like that I live by. I've been doing this work for about 2 years and have been facilitating a group for now about 6 months. And I just want to talk honestly and openly about that, because this is the first I'm hearing of it. And I'm worried, and I just want to get your insight.
So this is the first you're hearing about this condition where you said you got backed up, but and there was like an IBS way.
Well, they didn't use the term IBS, but they said I'm extremely backed up and I need to, like, you know, obviously empty. But this is like, I'm not a chronic person who has IBS symptoms. I'm not a chronic person who has all, like, whatever constipation, diarrhea. Like, I'm not someone who rolls by that's not a label that has been given to me. Right. So I'm just wondering about it. I'm wondering about it as the symptom imperative, because it's very scary to be, have that pain amplified. I guess the question is, the pain is amplified after so much work, so much work. And it's amplified to a place where I, having done the work, known the work, breathed the work, maybe not as much as you, definitely not as much as you, ends up in the hospital. So just like,
okay. Yeah, I got you. So here's the situation. Constipation is like a top tier symptom imperative, top tier. And here's the thing about your human body. Constipation is simply the lack of the right, I'm not a medical doctor, so I'm choosing my words carefully, because it's like there's not a balance. It's called a balance. I'm going to mute you because I'm hearing feedback. There's not a balance in your gut. Okay. And so things are moving more slowly. And so you get constipated, but that is such a TMS equivalent. I see Sophie saying in the chat, they call the gut the second brain. And so that was my number one first TMS symptom as a child. I was horribly constipated, created huge problems and anxiety in my life when I was a young child and throughout my childhood. And I just hear about it all the time. So what I'm saying to you, Joanna, and I know it's scary, is that you just got a pretty severe dose of the symptom imperative. So the most important thing for you to do, because we're going to live in the solution now, right? That happened. Okay. You know, there's no shame. There's no regret. You went to the hospital. We always go to the hospital when we think we need help. Like, this is not something that we play with. Like, what if your appendix was bursting? You know, like I am a big fan of getting the help you need no matter what. But when you go somewhere and they evaluate you and they say, okay, well, indeed, your appendix is not bursting. You have a backup constipation, IBS flare, whatever you want to call it, even if you weren't ever labeled with that, that's like saying, you know, when I got hip pain for the first time and I thought I had a back problem, and I was like, but wait, there's no problem with my hip. And there was no problem with my hip. It's just the symptom imperative. And so I really just feel as if you did the right thing. You got nervous, you responded, you did the responsible thing. And now it's all about just being with the grief, maybe being with the rage that it's just another boring TMS equivalent, and you are just on the path, and practice a ton of self-compassion, because that's where we find ourselves, and it's just so normal. So if there's anything I could do for you, Joanna, it would just put my proverbial arms around you and say, you're normal. Welcome to the world, baby girl. Like, it's just, this is the way it happens. And you did the right thing. But now it's about moving on and knowing that that is just straight up TMS. Thank you. Jacqueline, you're next.
So if pain is a danger alarm signal, why do you hear more often than not that once someone's physical symptoms have dissipated, that they tend to experience, whether it's more anxiety or more depression? Because yes, we are human beings, we are hardwired to feel. But does that mean that someone hasn't fully completed the work, or it's just part of being human? Because when I think about pain, what does it do? It stops you in your tracks. It forces you to slow down. So I'm curious about how, once someone has, let's say, healed or the pain has dissipated physically, why there is such a prevalence of symptoms manifesting into the emotional, more intensive anxiety, or let's say someone experiencing depression.
So it's so funny that you're the one asking this question, because you are a person who loves to say done, and you are the person that loves to say once we're finished with this. Okay. So first of all, and in terms of the spiritual realm, it's not just that I'm answering these questions and you guys are randoms. I know you guys, and I know you, my love. And so part of my answer is going to be speaking to the fact that this is a lifelong process. We flow with it for our entire lives, and we're not going to lock into being done, because I know that that has challenged you in the past. Having said that, and because we're on audio, she's nodding her head very hard. She knows. And I love that these questions are such a catalyst for growth. Okay. Having said that, anxiety is back pain. Back pain is IBS. IBS is depression. Depression is pelvic pain. Panic attacks are that, hip pain. This is just born TMS. It moves and it morphs. And what Jacqueline's calling out is that it is a common pathway for physical manifestations of TMS, meaning you had back pain, you had headaches, you had a stomach thing, you had a visible skin thing. Okay, that clears up, but now you are literally feeling like you're in danger all day. You know, you're walking in the park and you keep looking around for who's gonna attack you. Your children tell you they had a bad day and you feel like your heart's gonna beat out of your chest. Like, what the fuck? You know, like, but it's just the same. It's your nervous system asking. So your beating heart, your dry mouth, your panic is simply another question. Your nervous system is saying, knock, knock, knock. Do you need more protection? Because we can do it this way too. And you, and as you learn this work and as you walk this path, your responsibility is to pause and to say, hey, I hear you. You're coming in the form of anxiety today. You're coming in the form of depression and hopelessness today. You're coming in the form of fatigue today. You're coming in the form of low energy and negative thinking today. Huh, I hear you. I see you. I see that you are just a manifestation of what you used to show up as back pain. You know, it's kind of like Ram Dass says, picture that everybody you meet is God in drag. Because basically what he's saying in that is that everyone has a lesson for us. Everyone has a teaching. Like, don't dismiss someone because you think they're unimportant. Well, it's the same thing. Everything is just TMS and drag. And so it's like, how are they showing up today? And then, you know, and this speaks to both Joanna and Jacqueline's questions, which is, oh, okay. Well, if everything's just TMS and drag, then hi. And if you're Joanna, hi, I'm not sure what you are. I'm going to the hospital. You know, that's what we do first. If you're really terrified, I don't want you treating something as TMS. But once you're checked out and you see, okay, just TMS and drag, then we just treat it the way we treat everything else. We wear it loosely. We do the work. We practice our belief and our self-compassion practices, blah, blah, blah. I'm the most boring person in the world. I'm always telling you to do the same thing, but it works. And then you end up living where I live, where sometimes I get a little panicky and sometimes I get anxious and sometimes I'm having a down day and sometimes I feel my back is tight and sometimes I have a, who gives a shit? I'm a human being living a human life. Nothing scares me. Nothing gets stuck. Nothing gets chronic. All right. I see a big smile on my Jacqueline's face. Jennifer, Barber, you're next.
Hi. I actually wrote down my question so I could be more articulate. So how do you know when certain things are called for when you're dealing with your symptoms? So for example, you can strap your symptoms in the car seat, say I'm driving the car, you don't get to pick the snacks and we're going anyway. Or you can take time and say, I see you, kind of more of an inner child approach. What do you need? What are you trying to tell me? Or if you're having severe symptoms, you can just say, okay, today's a bad day. I'm just going to take it easy. I'm going to rest in bed. And that's that. And I guess I'm asking that because I know from some of the work that we've talked about with retraining our neural pathways, that we don't want to necessarily give TMS this license to run our life, but yet we still want to be paying attention to some of the feelings and emotions that come up through it. So how do you know when each of those things is called for along that continuum, I guess, of approaches?
That is such a great question, Jennifer. Thank you for bringing it up. Okay. I have a very confident answer to that, which is the whole point of this whole thing we're doing is to send a message of safety to our nervous systems. That's it. So whenever I say start with the end in mind, we start there. We pause and say, okay, if every single thing I'm doing in its best form is going to speak to that end in mind, which is I'm going to send a message of safety to my nervous system. Then the next part of your answer is you are learning to hone your intuition, right? So on some days, sending a message of safety is, guess what? I'm canceling that lunch. I'm sitting down. I'm giving myself an hour with my journal speak and my meditation today. I really need it. Sometimes sending the message is, you know what? I am going to give my innermost repressed emotional world a little break today. Today is all about Netflix, lunch, and blowing off that work meeting because I'm not, you know, and blah, and blah, and blah. You are the expert on you. And this is the most important message. As I'm writing this book, I'm getting very excited because I'm at the end of the process of writing this book. So I'm in the stories and I'm in the final chapter where I'm like, gonna send you off into the world. And it's like, what do I want to say? What do I want to communicate? And the most important thing for anyone who has ever suffered in chronic pain is you are the expert on you. Not big pharma, not the 50th doctor who told you you have an incurable condition and you're never gonna get better. You actually need to learn. We are not taught to trust ourselves, to know ourselves, and to feel like we are the expert. We're not taught that. And so you have an opportunity in this amazing question to say, all of those are the right answer, depending on the day. And the only thing you ever have to think about is, what is carrying a message of safety to my nervous system? And if you find yourself, this is an addendum, if you find yourself on day 4 saying, I can blow off my journal speak again today, it feels good to avoid it, then you have to look at your resistance. And you have to say, is my resistant voice just another form of TMS? Is my resistant voice trying to save me from looking at my dark stuff? Okay, my intuition today says it's not time for Netflix. It's time that I do this work today. And it's such a beautiful thing, honestly, when you do this for long enough to feel like you have such a fluid relationship with self and you actually know how you feel and you actually like don't have to wait too long once you have that question come into your mind to know the answer. So it's a great question. Thank you for that.
Thank you. That is so helpful. Just trust myself.
Yes. Yes. And work on and build the relationship. You know, we always talk about relationship building. Lisa and I are going to write a whole course curriculum on it because we want to have people be able to break their cycle of chronic relationship issues. Having said that, isn't the most important relationship in the world the one with yourself? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this is what we get an opportunity. Our pain is an invitation and we get an opportunity to build that relationship. Okay, Holly, you are next.
I can't get my camera on for some reason. Does that matter?
No, I just need your voice.
Sorry. My question is about journaling. And since I've been doing your work, I've been doing the journaling like consistency every single day. And I always do it in the morning. So I set my alarm like half an hour before everyone else gets up because I've got children and stuff. And I know that I can be consistent by doing that. But the only thing I'm finding is that I always like, all I can feel is how tired I am. And it's like really hard to really like try and zone in on actual feelings. And I do sometimes journal in the evening as well, but that's not consistent. But I do sometimes do that. And I feel like when I've had like my whole day and I'm coming towards the end of the day, that's when I've had some real big like insights and feelings come out when I've done it then. But I know that if I'm doing it in the morning, that's when I can be consistent. My question just is, I know it's not a waste of time, but it almost feels like when I'm doing it in the morning and I'm all I can feel is like how tired I am. And, you know, I'm switching my lights on. I'm doing it in my bedroom, but I've got lights on. I'm doing my journaling. I'm sitting up. It's not like I'm lying down and falling asleep, but it's, I feel like that is taking over and I'm not, I feel like, is it a waste of time that I'm trying to get my journaling done? And all I'm feeling is how tired I am, basically.
That is such a great question. And I really, really relate to that because there have been times where I'm doing my journal speak and it's not the morning. I actually think that I get this TMS reaction of extreme exhaustion while I'm journaling as a way to keep me from my big feelings. And I know people have expressed that actually in my communities. Okay. And I'm relating to that because I know how it feels to feel like, is this like a waste? Like I'm falling asleep, you know? Okay. So I totally get it. Here's what I want to tell you. This is, so I love when there's thematic things in our Q&As, which like there always are. The theme is intuition. It's more important to feel that your journal speak is productive than to be uber consistent, even though I really never want to speak against consistency because it's so important. But really, really, this is such an opportunity for you to say, okay, how can I pick, let's say, out of 7 days a week, how can I pick 4 days this week that I know I'm going to get it done at some point? You know, can I put my kids in front of the TV for 20 minutes? Can I get, you know, either childcare or my partner to just right after dinner time? Like it might not be the same time every day, but I actually love the idea that you're seeing a difference in the productivity of the journal speak at different times of the day.
Yeah.
I like that better than forcing an early morning exhausted, you know, just kind of like doing it to go through the motions. So I actually do have an opinion on it. And I think that you want to err on the side of, productivity and feeling like you're connected to the work.
Okay. So you would say that if I'm doing it, maybe not as consistent, but in the evenings rather than just every single day in the morning, and then it feels like it's not getting me anywhere, basically.
Exactly. And like, let's say you go through a few days and like the evening hasn't worked. Okay. We'll wake up the next morning and just to not get out of the practice, maybe do it. But I really think in terms of consistency, it's more important that you feel like you're diving in and getting somewhere.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Christine, you're up.
Yes. I'm still taking many precautions related to COVID, but I'm too isolated and I want to get back to normal life, but I have so much fear. And so my question is, how do I let go of my fear of COVID?
Okay. That I actually just saw, I haven't been able to answer every question in the community, but I saw you posted there. So good. I can answer this here. There are two ways for me to answer this question. There's the therapist way and there's the person walking around in the world way. And I'm going to answer the second first, because we're all in a big worldwide global group of having to have lived through this, the first global pandemic of all of our lifetimes. And it is traumatic. And we have, fear has been embedded into some of our neural pathways. So we all have different strategies for dealing with that. So here's the strategy I want to just offer you, sort of, it's just a human strategy, take it or leave it. Over the holidays, this past Thanksgiving, we went to a big dinner. The host of the dinner tested positive for COVID the day after, so nobody could have known. Two of my children got COVID. A lot of other people were sick. And it was like a bad cold bordering on a little flu-y? Like my human answer to your question is the likelihood is that you're going to be fine. And I think we just have to make a decision. There's huge power in making a decision and just saying, you know what? Fear. Okay. So now my therapist hat is coming on. I think you should have a little dialogue in your journal, speak with fear. Okay. So you and fear are going to have a conversation. So you're going to say, fear, you go first. I'm going to fully listen to you. Bring it. What are all the things that you think are going to happen to me? Speak openly. I'm not going to interrupt. And let fear speak. And then what I want you to say back to fear is, I hear you. I get it. You have absolutely every right to feel the way you feel. But now I want to counter your fear, having heard you, not trying to shut you down, with logic. So logic and fear can't exist in the same space when logic has facts behind it. And the logic is that right now, our bodies have been exposed to COVID now over 2.5 years, 3 years. And it's just not as dangerous as it once was in a mass scale. I'm not saying that there aren't people that are being severely affected, but the odds are in your favor that you would just get sick and it would be kind of a bummer of a few days. You certainly know, because you're on my team right now, that you're not going to get long COVID. All long COVID is TMS. So like, take that one off the worry chart. And life is a choice between what hurts and what hurts worse, Christine. And if you feel like you're isolated, and if you feel like you're getting more TMS symptoms because of the inner rage that you are not able to let this go, sometimes you have to have the big girl panties conversation and say, life is not a choice between what hurts and what's awesome. Life is not a choice between, I wish COVID never happened and then it did. No, COVID happened and here we are. And so what hurts and what hurts worse? Now, if you told me, it really does hurt worse for me to go out into the world, it just hurts worse, I'm just too scared, I would say fine, but I don't get that from you. I don't. I think you're ready. I think you're ready to open to the fact that it's really, the likelihood is it's just going to be like kind of a shitty cold flu situation and you would be fine. And you would then feel far less scared. And life is to be lived. Here we are.
Thanks. I think I'm waiting till after the holidays to change a whole lot. But
have the conversations with fear throughout the holidays. And so yes, you can feel a little desensitized. Yes. Yes. All right. Thank you. Sophie, you're up.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, great. Because the last time I had some difficulty. Okay. I just wanted to ask you about addiction because I have a lot of addiction in my family and, you know, they all keep saying it's a disease, et cetera. But is addiction just the same thing as TMS, depression, anxiety, back pain, et cetera? Is it all just the same? Is it all just trauma-based stuff? Because addicts just want to stop feeling things, you know? So wanted to ask something about that.
Yeah, you know, I'm a very big proponent of never answering something with confidence that I don't know the answer to. So I actually don't know the answer to that. So here's what I'm going to say. Gabor Maté does incredibly in-depth work on addiction. And I feel I feel like his work and my work there's such a bridge between them that if you're really interested in learning more about that, I would have to refer you to his book. I know he has written a book called When the Body Says No, and that is, I think, a lot about addiction and about not being able to handle, you know, certain trauma that is triggering you. And I think that he is the one to refer you to. Now, having said that, here's what I'll say about addiction. It's sort of a similar thing that I'll say about cancer. So a lot of people ask me about cancer, you know, can your work cure cancer? And I say, my work certainly cannot cure cancer. You cannot journal away a tumor. If you are diagnosed with cancer, please, God, seek, you know, the appropriate medical care. However, I do honestly really believe that my work can prevent cancer, because I think that when we live up here in fight or flight for years and years and years, it has to affect the way our cells change, morph, and create the environment for cancer. This is just, I just believe it. I believe it because I know how much stress and repressed emotions lower our immune responses. So in the same vein, do I think that addiction is TMS? No, I don't think it's that clean. But do I think that if you are born with an addictive personality, and if you are a person that maybe is predisposed to becoming an addict, and then you live in that space, are you more likely to have that switch flipped on in your body? I do believe that. I do. And I think that that's where doing this work can really prevent one from going down the road that that's so such destructive road of addiction.
Oh, just a follow up. How is it different then from, I mean, have an addiction or depression? I mean, you also become born in a depressive or anxious way, right? So how is that different from addiction?
Because addiction is a behavior. Addiction is not a state of being. Addiction is picking up a drink, picking up a drug, picking up there are personalities that are more, that tend more toward addiction, but I feel like addictive behaviors are TMS, but addiction, and this is where I just, once again, in disclaimer, I am not an expert on addiction. I'll only speak to the extent should always make you guys feel good. When you hear from me, this is the way it is, and I'm confident, that's that. I have researched it. I have lived it. I have taught it. I have practiced it. I have witnessed it. You will always hear that kind of extreme confidence. But when I don't know something, I say, somebody else knows better than me.
Okay.
Thank you, Sophie.
Thank you.
Okay. Kim, you're up.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi, Kim.
Hi. So my question is, so I've had TMS for quite a long time. They call it fibro. You know, I can't touch my legs and everything is just skyrocketed. Well, so I've been learning all this and I get it. I understand the fear and anxiety is what's causing me more pain. But I have a structural problem where I had a bladder prolapse and they fixed it and they messed up. And so I have to cath myself. Well, now that I'm doing that a lot, I keep getting bladder infections and they keep turning into C. diff. And so it's got me terrified. I'm just literally terrified of it because I've been on antibiotics now for like 2 months. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how can I get out of this fight or flight, because staying in it with what I got going on right now is keeping my other symptoms that were the main problem going even harder. So how do you deal with the structural problem when you also have TMS?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we're going to, once again, thematically, we're going to roll back into the concept of acceptance. Okay. So the fact that you're terrified, that's the problem, because terror is going to trigger all sorts of alarm bells in your system, obviously. And so I'm not a medical doctor. I know nothing about whether or not you're the medical, it sounds like malpractice, is reversible. So I'm going to speak as if it's not. And so let's just say it's not. Let's say there was a mistake and it has changed you physically and structurally. And so this cath is necessary. I would practice similarly to what I just described for that other question. Journals speak for radical acceptance around that. That's not going to change, right? That's part of your body now. And that is what it is. And so if you can just sit with that and stop wanting it to be otherwise, and I know how challenging this is, so I never say this lightly, but if you sit with that and you do the Journal Speak for Radical Acceptance exercise, and I think you guys all know, I have taught it on this group, but probably before some of your time, there is a Journal Speak for Radical Acceptance mini retreat available on my website. It's a 2-hour, it will teach you the whole process if it's something that you need more structure around. Having said that, when you practice that and you get the things in your life settled inside your heart and your mind and your gut, that there's nothing changing this thing. Okay. So like, let me stop getting inflamed around this particular thing. Then the terror is drained from that. And then you get to live in the reality of what, you know, you get to live in, which is there are highs and lows, there are challenges and there are celebrations. And like, we can live in all the feelings around that, but without constantly being in that fight or flight state. So I would say that would be a good first place to begin.
All right. Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you, Kim. Betsy, you're up.
Hi. I think you kind of answered this, but let me do a quick one. I broke my femur into 14 pieces right as the pandemic started. And I got put back together. But the doctor, there were a couple of pieces of bone she couldn't find. And I'm fine. I'm walking. And I mean, I still have some pain, but basically I'm fine. But one of my legs is feels like, well, when I look at it, it's about half an inch shorter. And my SI joint pain has gotten worse since I had my knee thing, my leg thing. So I'm considering going to HSS in New York to do a gait analysis and see if that's affecting me. So do you think that's a reasonable thing to do? I mean, I'm doing the journal speak and doing the work, and but I'm considering doing that.
Okay. All right. Here's what I want to say to you. And actually, I have a pretty solid expertise for this. My right leg is a quarter to a half an inch shorter than my left. Mm-hmm. It might be because I do have a spinal condition. It's called spondylolisthesis. It doesn't cause me any pain, but I do have an abnormality that could be the reason that my muscles just atrophied in a certain way. And for a long time, I had terrible hip pain. It was terrible to the point where I called my therapist, who is a TMS therapist. This is maybe about 7 years ago. And I said, oh God, I kind of want to go to physical therapy, but I feel like that's like so like against my work. And he goes, don't be silly, go to physical therapy, but take it like a vitamin. So he and I have the same theories, which is like, don't give it all this pressure. Don't make it, it doesn't have to heal you or fix you. See what they say and blah, blah, blah. So of course I go into physical therapy. They note the change in the difference in my legs. And they say, well, most likely you're going to need hip surgery. And of course, I immediately said to myself, wasn't rude, but I was like, yeah, no, that's definitely not going to happen. And I was like, okay, well then tell me, what can we do? I'm not getting it now. So what can we do to you know, work with what I got in a non-invasive way? And I knew what I needed. I knew what I needed, which is I needed to be in it with someone. I needed to show up there once a week. I wanted them to give me exercises to strengthen my core. They stretched me. They massaged me. I felt like I was taking care of myself. And little by slow, and then I really rededicated myself to my journal speak practice because I was like, fuck this noise. I'm not going to, you know, be in pain for 1 second longer than I have to. My hip pain went away completely. I have, sometimes it flares when I'm like in a really, really like angry mood and I'm like, there you are. But for the most, I have no hip pain. I run 5 miles, nothing, nothing, nothing. My legs are still the same. So here's what I want to say before, like when you have those ideas about HSS, which is the Hospital for Special Surgery, if anyone's curious, that it's injecting the doubt that's going to make the pain worse. So you may do that. I will never stop anyone from doing a medical intervention, but I can almost guarantee you that it's going to cause a lot, like a backslide, because there's always, you walk into the HSS, someone's going to tell you you need surgery. 1,000,000,000%. That's what they do.
I wouldn't do that. I would definitely not do that.
If you wouldn't do that, then I would say, take words, inject them into your confidence and your belief and say, maybe this is just a very normal manifestation of the team. You know, the brain is so wily and it really allows your nervous system to direct it in the way you're going to believe it the most. And anytime we have any physical finding, it is just a perfect inroad for this TMS to get the attention that it thinks it needs to save your life. And so thank it and be like, you know, and there are miracles of modern science all the time where people are missing a little bit of a bone. I have a vertebrae that shattered and replaced with scar tissue. I have no pain. And then there's Barb, who's on my podcast, who has no cartilage left in her hip. Like it's as bone on bone as it could be. She was almost in a wheelchair and now she climbs mountains just from TMS work. Like, I think it's just so important to pause and not believe every single thing that we've always thought could be, quote, wrong with us.
Yeah.
Thank you, Betsy.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I actually posted my question on the chat, but I thought, you know, let me just put it out there. So I'm a newbie. I'm very new to all of this. And I just turned 73 years old. And I guess that radical acceptance, I'm at the point where I'm accepting that I do have a chronic pain condition. I've had MRIs, I've had injections in my back. I'm in physical therapy right now and working with a pain doctor. I was actually thinking of having a second opinion consult at the Hospital for Special Surgery, but I'm putting that on hold. So my question is, again, because I'm really new to all of this, including journal speak, for now, for the time being, because there are times when I'm in so much pain, I literally can barely walk.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do take over-the-counter Tylenol and Aleve and all that, and that helps to take a little bit of the edge off. So it's a question of this and that, as opposed to this or that. Mm-hmm. Like, can I continue for now, you know, with the more conventional treatment, the physical therapy, I go to Stretch Lab, you know, where they stretch me and, you know, delve more deeply into TMS and the journal speak and this work. Can I kind of, at least for now, do both? And maybe that's okay. My anxiety or fear.
Yeah, I'm gonna answer you the way Dr. Sarno would answer you when we used to lecture at NYU. He would stand up and he would say, "Debbie, honey, I'm a New Yorker. I hear a little New York in your voice."
Oh, I'm a Bronx gal.
Yes, my mom grew up in the Bronx. He would say, "Debbie, dear, stop it. You're new to this. Give the TMS a chance." TMS is so painful, Debbie. I was being carried to the bathroom at age 19. I couldn't walk. People are in wheelchairs. So the pain is so extreme and it is not in your head, but the brain and the nervous system responsible for absolutely everything that you feel in your body. So if it is locked up, if you are in fight or flight and your brain and your nervous system deem that to be a danger to your life, they can send signals of spasm, muscle constriction, inflammation, all the things that make us suffer. And so what I would say to you through Dr. Sarno channeled through me is, honey, if you're new to this, for a moment, drop it all, even the physical therapy, because I'll tell you why. The reason I was able to go to physical therapy is I was in such a place where I truly knew that I didn't need it to change my body, but I also really needed something to shake it up. I needed partnership. I couldn't just be by myself anymore. My therapist knew it. He said, go with God, be with the physical therapist, but you know what you know. And that's it turned the channel for me. And I needed that, but you are at a dangerous place to be in physical therapy because it really is a subtle message to your brain that you need a physical solution for a physical problem. And I know how badly it hurts, but I have a very good intuition about these things. And Debbie, I think you can be completely pain-free from this work because what you're saying, it's not a health condition. You're not telling me there's any question. You don't have a tumor on your spine. You know, you probably have the regular stuff. They found a disc. They found a little slip. It's all normal abnormalities. Dr. Sarno's been preaching this since the 50s. And so it's just, I think you should go for it. I think you should go for it. Dive into this work. Be with us. Listen to the podcasts. You know, do my online course if you really need more direction, whatever it is. And move through this. I think you're going to see a great change. And you're 73. You still have so much left to live. You want to celebrate life. Awesome. Awesome. Okay.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. Marguerite.
Hi, Nicole.
Hi,
everyone. I'm new to the community, so it's great to
be welcome.
And and I'm not totally new to Dr. Sarno's work. I actually had his book back when I was 35. I had a leg injury and it really helped me, but I hadn't really associated this work to what I've been going through the past few years. And finding you was just such a godsend, and listening to your podcasts and all the stories of people has just helped me so, so much. So I just first want to just say thank you for
all that
you're doing. I feel emotional just sharing that. So my question, I have a couple, but my question recently is how do I deal with the fear and anxiety that comes up for me with medical tests? So things were sort of calm. And then I got this I was getting teeth work and I got a CT scan saying that I had a blocked artery. So got my heart checked, everything was great. But then they said, need to check your lungs because there's something in your lungs. And it just threw me into so much anxiety and fear. I don't like medical doctors and all that, but I know at times I have to do that. So that's what's showing up. And so now I have to kind of see a pulmonologist to check that. It doesn't seem like anything serious. It's an extra mucus. It could be from past infections, blah, blah, blah. But the thing with it is when I get my anxiety or fight or flight triggered, I have a hard time like then turning it off. It feels like it just affects, it's like the lens that I see everything with and everything feels.
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally get it. There's a post that I once created on Instagram that said, when your body goes into that protective mode, it takes a period of time and whatever period of time that is for each of us to calm down. So once again, theme of the call, acceptance. You look at that energy of fight or flight. Let me say this first. You need medical tests, right? None of this work is going to be helpful to us if we drop dead from a heart attack or an aneurysm. So we need the medical tests we need. Okay, you practice acceptance around this. Oh, well, I'm living in this physical body. It deteriorates over time. Shit happens. It happens to all of us in the way it's going to happen to all of us. So doctor says I need medical tests, my heart, my arteries, getting them. Practice radical acceptance, do the exercise, look at it on paper and say, there we are. I could fight it or I could not fight it, but the energy, but the outcome is the same. I'm going to have to get the test because I am going to take care of myself. And so that's like the Byron Katie quote that I love, which is you can argue with reality, but you only lose 100% of the time. And so we can just live with that. So that's the first thing, which is you got to get the test. You practice the radical acceptance. You try to calm. But if you are launched into that fight or flight reaction anyway, then what you do is you say, hey, I see you're here trying to protect me. All right. Can't say I love you, but you're here. Stay as long as you want. I'm going to go over here and go out to lunch with my friend, or I'm going to go over here and finish this work thing, or I'm going to be right over here, you know, parenting my kid, but stay, because I know if I try to fight you, you're only going to stay longer. So whatever, you're a little boring, stay. This is the energy we need for our symptoms, for our anxiety, for our fight or flight reactions, because they need to not feel like we're giving them more energy of fear. Everything you do should be toward safety. How does the nervous system feel safe? When you go, oh, you're here? Okay, cool. Have a seat in the back. I'm going to go do this. And all they get bored. They're like, oh, okay, well, you don't need my protection anymore. I'm going to head out. That's what we want.
Got it. Okay, thanks. But is there a journal speak that would help with that? Like a specific question or?
Really, the journal speak for radical acceptance exercise is the most powerful for anything we can't change. And like I said, if you want more instruction, there is a 2-hour mini retreat on my website that goes through the whole process.
Thank you so much.
You are so welcome. All right, Martina, we're going to take yours and then we're going to jump over to Melanie.
Yes. I've come to realize that there's actually a lot of shame in my life. Like I feel shame for so many things, often very irrelevant things. And I know that this comes from childhood trauma. Apparently it's very common, but I struggle to deal with it. Like I don't know what to do with it. I do journal speaking, but it just doesn't seem to be affected and really stuck. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this.
So this is going to go along the lines of when I say your nervous system is like an abused puppy that has been in the shelter for a long time, and you come into the shelter and you fall in love with this puppy and you say, I'm going to bring her home with me. And so now you have her in the house, but she's not just going to like jump into your lap, right? She needs to like feel safe. So on the first day you hold out the treat and she just cowers in the corner. And the second day you hold out the treat and she gets halfway to you and she goes back to the corner. And on the third day you hold out the treat and she grabs it from your hand and then she runs back to the corner. And as you show up consistently and consistently, there will be a day where she takes the treat out of your hand and she curls up in your lap. And it's like with our shame, with our pain, with our childhood trauma, with our triggers, we just have to say, there's no urgency here.
I'm going to show up every day. We're going to talk about this again, even though I don't want to, but it will lessen and it will lessen. It will soften and it will soften. And you will find more opportunities where you can really embrace that girl that felt so much shame, and you will align with her and you will relieve her of her responsibility of keeping you safe and paranoid. And I will promise you it will ease, but it just takes time. So no urgency. Here you are, young, beautiful, here with us. It's okay. It's okay. That's the energy.
Thank you, Nicole.
You're so welcome. All right, Hillary, we're going to make it quick and then we're going to close up.
I've had so much trouble with a couple of the things that I think are resistance, but I get into layers of wait. Is that following my gut instinct today, because I think I have a really strong connection with that. And I'm, you know, I've done this kind of work for a long time, and I'm 100%, I think, you know, it's like, this is my path and I get it. And then I still have these, you know, there's the layer of the onion keeps unpeeling, and I get caught between going like, I get a consistent practice, but not when I have company, not when I'm traveling, not when it's a holiday, not when there's anybody else in my house. It's kind of bad habits. It's like I get caught between, do I have to develop a practice that's so consistent, and that's why I'm not getting better? But And then I hear your voice, you know, and then I also hear a great question earlier about, you know, if it's working for me, when it's working for me, and that feels right, that's okay too. Nicole, you once said, when somebody asked the first time I got involved with you, and they said, am I doing Journal Street wrong? And you said, honestly, the only way to do it wrong is to not do it.
Not do it. Yes. So your question kind of bridges the theme of shame, which was just asked, and how to follow your intuition. And all the answer to all of this is you really have to wear it loosely, honey. You know, sometimes the urgency to be good and to be right and to, you know, do what you always thought made you a person that was following the rules is the urgency that's keeping us stuck. And so it's about, first of all, wearing it all loosely. Like, I'll give you an example. I committed to myself, that I was going to do journal speak every day. And I think I lasted 3 days. And then we had to go to New York for a family bat mitzvah. And I was like, oh, I'll get it done on the plane. And then I didn't. And it's like, am I going to sit around and shame myself for that? No. Anytime you can practice just forgiveness, just like, hey, you're a human being. How about this moment could be a good moment? How about I could actually forgive myself right now and just like have a day and see if I can get to it if I can, but also with the overwhelming, overriding umbrella of, I know what's good for me. I know what's good for me. It's kind of like when I walk past a donut, okay? Anyone who's been living with me in this work for any number of years knows that I think donuts are God's food. I literally love donuts, and they are everywhere. They're served for breakfast. They're served for dessert. They're beignets. They're everywhere. I eat donuts when I want to, but I also know that they really don't make me feel well. And so sometimes I forgive myself and I'm like, just eat it. And sometimes I'm like, you know what? Actually, I don't want to feel that way. And it's a balance. It's a balance. Our whole life is a balance. And I can see on your face that you get it. And I would really invite you, Hillary, to just be easy and gentle with yourself while knowing you can still do what makes you feel good and what you know will advance your life and your practice. I know that we are recording this for audio, but these faces, these beautiful faces that I get to see as I answer these questions, I've got Hillary with double hands to heart and a big smile on her face. And I know that you guys all appreciate being here. And for the purposes of the podcast, I'm going to wrap this on up because I know not everybody wants to be on air, but thank you guys so much for being generous enough to let people hear these questions and these answers. It is so life-giving. You know, I as I said, I'm writing this book, and as I write it, I'm reading people's stories that they've submitted to me. And it's like, the fact that this book is going to be translated into multiple languages, the fact that we're going to get this message out to people all over the world, it is the most precious gift we will ever give people. So thank you guys for being generous enough to allow this conversation to reach more people than just the small group that's on this call. Thank you. And for all of you guys out there, this has been the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast with me, Nicole Sachs. Peace out. Lots of love.